You're listening to the Outpost Podcast with Dr. Ray Mitch. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Outpost Podcast. I'm Dr. Ray Mitch, your host. What have you found yourself into, or where have you found yourself? Maybe you haven't been looking for it and you heard something about the Outpost Podcast. Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. We're looking at three different areas of existence and faith, of psychology and spiritual formation. At any given point in time, we can talk about a lot of different things in that kind of universe, if you will. Psychology, certainly. And it, like I said, at any given point in time, I can be talking about psychology and then turn to what does it mean for my spiritual journey? And that's kind of what we've been talking about. But overall, what the podcast is meant to do is to create a space where the doubters and the wounded and the beat up and beat down and the bent and bruised who feel like their lives are a disappointment to God can know and be known and also can bump into the biblical Jesus, not as they've heard him to be or anything like that. So pull up a chair, get comfortable, relax. And we're going to be talking about issues that I think are relative to some of the bigger questions we might ask in our spiritual lives and our spiritual journey and where we are and how do we get here and to some degree where we're heading. And so there are two key principles that I have mentioned with each of these episodes that I've been walking through. The first one is you can't move anywhere if you don't know where you are. And that's a key to any directions that we're taking, no matter what we're doing and no matter what journey we're trying to take, is we need to know where we are in order to figure out where we're going. And that's really what this series has been about, is we want to look at just kind of help you as my listeners discern where you are in the journey, not discern where you are in the journey compared to somebody else and then saying that you should do better. That's never going to happen. You're not going to hear me say that in any way, shape, or form. And so we just need to know where we are in order to chart a course for where we want to head. And then secondly, for those that have been down the road a little ways, you can't lead somebody someplace you've never been. And so to some degree, you don't have to have identical experiences with someone else. But we're talking about the human heart, and we're talking about the landscape of the human heart. And if you have any intention of sharing or connecting with somebody else about that landscape, then you probably have to have some experience and some challenge even in going through that. So where we're at now, we have looked at a variety of stages. I have been borrowing a lot of the material from a book called The Critical Journey, Stages in the Life of Faith, written by Janet Hagberg and Robert Gulick. And I have been borrowing from there and then kind of expanding it in light of some of the things that I have seen, whether it's on my own journey or listening to other people. And they talk about it in terms of stages, and I have real issues with talking about it as stages because it tempts us into developing kind of this never-ending, ascending ladder of virtues. And we go through stage one and then two and then three, and then we move on to greater and greater levels and so forth. That is not the nature of the journey that we're on. But I am going to use that stage language just to demarcate what phases of the journey that I'm talking about and what we're looking at. So we started it at 4 or 5 weeks ago talking about stage one, where we're actually converted. We actually learn about Jesus and learn about the invitation he has for us. And we move toward saying, hey, I want you in my life. I want to be able to live my life in alignment with the things that you're talking about. So I am going to, like I said, I'm going to align myself. I am going to make myself an apprentice under you, speaking to Jesus, of course. So that's stage one. Stage stage two is the we go from converted to discipled. Now we're looking for mentors, and we're looking for people that can walk with us through this journey and mark out what the path is going to look like and what kinds of things to look out for and the challenges that we face within that. And that temptation is that we bring with us what we have had in the life before Jesus. And so we carry all that baggage with us. And whether that's a perspective about life or how life should run or how we experience our emotions or any of that, that is also kind of pulled with us into even our discipled mentored life. And it has a direct impact on what even the kind of mentor we oftentimes feel most comfortable with may not be the mentor that we need the most, because we need people that are going to challenge our ways of thinking, not just simply affirm and encourage and say, you're doing fine and keep going kind of thing. So that's stage two. Stage three, we were in the productive life. And the productive life is where we dig in and start being useful and making contributions and doing things. There's a temptation there to even develop a spiritual pride around what I'm doing for God. And we end up creating a contract that God never signs. You know, is that if I do this for you, God, then you will bless me this way. And that's stage three, and that lasts for a good long time. And there's no timelines connected to any one of these stages. They can be a long time. They're usually moderate in time, but I'm not gonna nail down any specific timeline for any of that. So stage three is the productive life. And then we talked a little bit about kind of this interstage period between stage three and stage four, where it's the experience of the wall. And the wall is where we have kind of entered into this place where all of these things that we thought were true aren't so true, and all of the props and scaffolding and everything else that we've used in order to kind of prop ourselves up in our faith are all pulled out from under us. And we go through being angry at God and grieving where we've been and worried about where we're going and that kind of thing, which ultimately drives us then into what we call the inward journey, where I'm now addressing the specific issues that I wasn't really paying much attention to when I brought in to my faith. And so now I'm addressing those things, an astute, spiritually sensitive counselor comes in handy oftentimes during this time, but also just wise mentors that walk with us through a lot of that part of the stage of the inward journey. When we get to stage five, which is what I want to talk about tonight, is the outward journey. And with the journey outward is the next step after rediscovering God as He is and accepting the love that He's actually given to us. And that takes time. The acceptance of love sounds so easy, but it takes some time because it requires us to let go of our semblances of control that we use to make life predictable, to make life comfortable for us. So now we surrender ourselves to God's will to fully direct our lives, but now our eyes are wide open. We're aware of what the consequences will be, but we're not afraid of them. We're not unafraid of the consequences, but we realize what they are. And prior to that wall experience and even the inward journey, we weren't real clear about, or we weren't very aware. I mean, my old mentor used to say that, you know, you look at all the people that are sitting in the pews or in the rows of a church, the only thing that separates them is those that are awake and those that are asleep. And so we're moving into this place that we are now awake. We are now aware of what's going on in our lives. And we know that there are probably going to be consequences. So it's not like we're unafraid of them, but they don't hold us hostage. And so once the parts of the deep and excruciating kind of inward journey that we went through, we've been through those things, the natural outcome is to turn our attention outward, outside of ourselves, outside of our self-centeredness, and back into the active world. But now we've got a new sense of fulfillment, a new sense of motivation that isn't built on how can I increase my stock in the world around me, or how do I increase the level of approval that I am experiencing, or people's approbations and acclamations and all of these other things that go into it. It's not that. Because once we've done the inward journey, there's not a whole lot of anything that somebody can hold on us because we've already visited there. If we have things that we're hiding in our worlds, then there is something that can be threatened. But if we have done this inward journey and we have done this inward work, if you will, that is important to do, then when we turn our attention outward, it isn't to serve us, it is with a new sense of fulfillment and even a partnership with what God might be up to in the world around us. The thing to keep in mind is that this outward venture may or may not be different than the previous direction we had before all of this started happening. And we might actually return to an old direction. But again, we're getting to it with a focus that is outward, and we have a new grounded center of who we are in our relationship with God. Not so much what the outward can do for us, but how we can serve those in our outside world, our outward world. And so once again, we have been changed, and in a lot of ways, we experience a new level of wholeness that we didn't have going into the wall experience and then going through this inward journey. So we're aware, we are very aware of our faults and shortcomings, but we have a fresh desire to be in God's will rather than in our own. And so our tendency then, if that's the center of what we're moving toward, then we're going to be very focused on new evidence and new things that are coming toward us that would say maybe God's direction is a little different than mine. Maybe it's the same, but I'm desiring something different for that same thing, if you will. So our primary motivation in life becomes the desire to love honestly and authentically and ultimately to live according to God's purposes. And I know those better than ever because I've done this inward journey. Because God's purposes are revealed to me in that inward journey, not God's purposes that are revealed to me outwardly. Now I'm in that place. I am in that place now. And my eyes are newly sensitized to what that will look like and what that could be. So for some, the life patterns, the work habits, the friends, the ways of being may actually change really, really slowly. And so slowly that other people won't even notice some of the changes that have occurred. So it's not automatic that I am now moving into this outward journey and everything has changed. You know, all of my work habits are changed. All of how I relate to people has changed. Not entirely, because we're always in this movement. We're always in this movement of change and growth. And oftentimes we tend to judge ourselves according to a static understanding of where we are rather than a dynamic one that is always changing and moving according to what's going on in the world around us. So at stage five, we're not trying to explain our experience or distinguish it from other experiences. We don't have a lot of interest in being recognized unless someone inquires of us personally. We simply do not concentrate on ourselves. Now it needs to be said that even in stage three, the productive life, I can have a lot of people not concentrate on themselves in order to avoid themselves. Okay? And it's important. We can spend so much time taking care of other people that we don't do the hard work that it takes to take care of our own souls. And again, that's why I emphasize those two principles when we start. I can't lead somebody someplace I've never been. If I have not been in this world of learning how to care for and walk this landscape, then how in the world can I do that with somebody else? And so it's not often that you have somebody in this outward journey who hasn't gone through that. And a lot of that is stripped away so that their lack of concentration or obliviousness to themselves isn't an attempt to avoid anything. It just occurs to them less and less. And so it is very easy to not really notice the people who are at this stage five, if you will. And they like being in the background. They're there. They like to meet people that are in the background. And so oftentimes it's easy to confuse people at this stage five, with those at stage two, because both are surrendering in different ways. They're in the active state of surrendering in different ways. But in stage two, we surrender to that life of which we are sure. And in stage five, we surrender to that life purpose, which we have yet to know or understand. Because in stage five, we're moving toward grasping, accepting, and embracing, trusting God in the fullness of who He is. Which means I'm not going to know everything about my purpose, my life purpose. It will reveal itself in time. And in my own experiences, that certainly has been the case. Because I started out my career as a career psychologist. And working with people, that's all I thought it was ever really going to be. There was a minor variation off of that when I started working in the mission world. But to now be in academics and teaching, that was a reveal of my life purpose that I never really considered. I had people say that I would be good at that, but I didn't believe them, quite honestly. I thought that they were naive and just being flattering. So at stage five, we at times may be very vulnerable and unclear about what our lives and our direction is. The thing that's different between stage two and stage five is there's a certain calmness about that. There's a certain inner peace about it that to many people is just downright mystifying. It's like, surely you're getting kind of worked up about not entirely knowing. And sometimes the person says, no, not really. And it's not a naive, God's got this kind of thing. It's more of, I know the relationship I have with God, and I count on that. And it'll be revealed to me at the time that I need it to be revealed. And until that time, then I can rest in where I'm at. That's the calmness that I was talking about. So we know that this very lack of clarity, God is just fashioning and bringing out of this lack of clarity, showing us what our call is. And see, this is the thing, and I think what oftentimes sabotages so much of people's journeys is the demand for clarity and a demand for a map. And if I don't have the map, then I will make a map so that I have some sense of clarity. But clarity and certainty war against trust. And that's what stage five is oftentimes characterized by, is this trust, this implicit trust of God's purposes and what He has for us and all of that. So now loved and accepted by God, the person now possesses a compelling call to live as the apprentice of Jesus. And wherever that takes him or her, that's the direction they're going to go. They don't really entirely know what that is going to be, but that's okay. That's okay. And ultimately, I think during this stage, a person discovers their true vocation, and namely serving the interests of others for Jesus' sake, whatever that looks like. In my case, it was teaching, and was teaching a specific age group. I taught in graduate school, so I had older students then, but I think pretty clearly most of feedback and most indications I've had is that this is exactly where I should be. This is what I'm supposed to be. This is who I'm supposed to be in this time. And so we discover our true vocation. Ministry and practice is now done not out of duty, but with a confidence and a calm, a restness, if you will, in it all. So a few highlights as far as the characteristics here of this stage. There's a renewed sense of God's acceptance in this stage. We grow into a fuller and fuller awareness that God truly loves us as we are, not as we should be, because we'll never be who we should be. And he loves us even though we are never entirely whole. And he loves us in our humanness. Saint Irenaeus, one of the ancient saints of the early church, said, "God, the glory of God is in man being fully human." And that's very different than we're accustomed to. And there in all of that lies a certain strange kind of humor, because we can laugh at ourselves and not feel put down, but ultimately loved. And it's kind of the what we see in young kids, right? They do the craziest things. They do the stupidest things. And it's funny. And us laughing at them doesn't make them bashful or ashamed or anything. If anything, they laugh right along with us because they think it's hilarious just seeing us laugh. And so we really do gain a renewed sense of God's unconditional love for us, seen both in the continuing and ultimate sacrifices God makes on our behalf. And that's really small things. I think in stage five, our eyes begin to be open to the reality of what my mentor of mine used to say, and that is we live in a God-saturated universe. If we just open our eyes, we will see him very, very busy and doing things just to lay those in on our lives to say, I'm still here. I still love you. I'm still there, here for you. I haven't abandoned you, even though you may have to fight feeling abandoned. But the thing to keep in mind here, particularly at this stage, is that wholeness looks a lot like weakness. And the reality is that wholeness doesn't make us any stronger. We think it does. A lack of brokenness, another way to put it. But ultimately, it is in our weakness and our brokenness that God's work can be more clearly seen. And so wholeness here means being very aware of my faults, but not letting them condemn me. I know them. I know them very clearly. But they're not the kind of thing that is a litany of condemnations that I run through because I'm so broken. Wholeness doesn't make us complicated. If anything, it makes us more accessible. And so wholeness can look like weakness. And God can use us most, I think we all know intellectually, God can use us most in our brokenness. But that is very difficult to accept until we go through the wall. And then we begin to realize that our brokenness is irrelevant in God's eyes. It's the fundamental essence of who we are that he loves as we are. And so we have a new sense of acceptance of God's love. We have a new sense of the horizontal life that we have. Remember, in stage four, the focus was on vertical relationship, is going deep between us and God. And we needed to go inside and do a lot of talking and battling and crying and listening and defending and surrendering to make our relationship right with God. And it took a lot of effort. It's little wonder that we call that work, spiritual work. And that may even have meant some healing from our previous images of who God is in that. But the emphasis in stage four is very narrow. It's very intense. It's very vigorous, but it's also very vertical. And stage five, the all of the work that's gone into that healing that has occurred at stage four, we continue to be healed, but we come alive in various ways, and the darkness is not holding us hostage anymore. It's seen as a fundamental component of our weakness or even our brokenness. And the movement at stage five is on the horizontal. It's outward. It's reaching out to other people from a sense of fullness and being loved, rather than looking to people to help me feel loved. And that's a key. That is a big key to understand here, I think, as far as what we're talking about. So it's a natural process that we don't even recognize this is happening. A lot of times the people around us will notice that it's happening before we will. And sometimes they'll say, you know, you have really changed. And we'll go, what are you talking about? And so people at this stage oftentimes are very surprised at the talents and skills and qualities that they are actually given to do the work that they are doing, that has been revealed to them in this stage five. And so they move horizontally and they find out that they are equipped to do that very thing. So the acceptance of God's love, assurance or sense of movement horizontally, that we have been called to that. So the sense of a horizontal life. And then we have a sense of calling or vocation or ministry. And so we go horizontal, but we have a more clear sense of what is on this journey of ours. We don't know what the specifics are, but we can generally distinguish our wishes from God's wishes. And because of our discipline of communication with God through journaling and conversations with him meditating on scripture or the quiet reflection with God to discern what his spirit is up to, that's what's going on here. And so there's this sense of vocation and calling, and then there's a concern and focus on others' best interests, not to the detriment of our own, but to have that be our focus. And that's what's key here. The focus is more on the process, not getting there, and on our role with others. And a lot of times what you'll hear people in stage two and three is talk about outcomes, what they're doing for God, rather than what God is doing in them. And stage five, you will hear these same things. So we're aware of maintaining a healthy self-image, but it's not excluding the self. There's a subtle kind of shift in focus from ourselves to others and then to the larger world out there. But we haven't left the self of who we are. We're not diminishing that in order for these other things. We are valuing that because that's the very thing that God has given us to care for. And that's pushes us then to move into other people's lives. And so there's a certain level of calmness or stillness during this time at stage five. There's a new longing just to be simply in God's presence and in God's fullness. And frequently during the day while we're in this kind of phase of our development, God's thoughts can be a part of our everyday thoughts all the time. And so we have special times of listening and praying and seeing and being with God, but then we have these pervasive moments where we're just feeling in God's presence no matter where we are. And the other thing about this is that even though we go through the kinds of things that I'm going through right now, having lost a dear friend of mine of 34 years just 3 weeks ago, and I can go through this loss and the pain and the sorrow and the grief that I feel and not feel like I'm losing touch with God. Earlier in my development, I would say I did. And it was like, God, you've abandoned me. Not only have I lost my best friend in the world, but now you're gone. And so it's out of our quietness, out of our calmness, that we gain this deep understanding and wisdom that really allows us to have the boundaries we need to care for others well, while at the same time taking the time, like Jesus did, to get away and to kind of refuel, if you will. Now, we can get stuck. Really, we can get stuck in this real easily. We can get careless. I take that back. We can get stuck in looking like we're out of touch with what's going on in the world around us, which is about producing and winning. It's not oriented toward that. And so I think a lot of times we can look less productive and a little isolated. And that's the danger here in some respects, is that we really end up being so heavenly minded we're no earthly good, as the old phrase used to go. And so there's always that danger, is it going a little too far. We're so taken with this world that we're living in and the relationship we have with God, is we forget about the horizontal nature of what we're talking about here. And so we end up looking a little careless about really important things to other people out there. And that's what tempts us into, going backwards or going back into earlier stages. And sometimes we have to go back to the inward journey to reevaluate and re-engage some of those issues again, because we realize that when we're out here in the horizontal world, there are certain things so tempting that we get drawn back into old habits and old behaviors. And that's a good reason to actually, to some degree, stop and slow down and move back a little bit just to gain more ground in the future. So eventually we will be moving into stage six, which is the last one. It's the life of love. And we have this craving for God that seems to be increasing. And as David portrays it, you know, a deer that pants for water because it's so thirsty in the desert. And so that's very much a part of the movement from stage five to six. Again, there is no timeline here. And there are places, like I mentioned before, where these stages can kind of collapse down on each other, and I have to go back into the inward journey again. So making good progress in this is to surrender and to rest in God, who brings forth even further growth for us. But at the same time, like I said, in stage five, we can bump into old behaviors, old relationships, old habits, and then we get thrown back into the wall again. And it won't be a bad thing. It's disconcerting because we're tempted to think that we failed, when in fact we're simply growing farther, and the challenges are getting greater. And with those challenges, I meet with what I maybe haven't developed an awareness of, or a skill with, or an acceptance of again. And that's a part that is a natural part of this journey that we're talking about here. So stage five is, and again, I don't want you to think that stage five is, wow, once I get here, then I am just in spiritual nirvana. No, you're not. If anything, the minute you start thinking that way is the minute you'll get thrown back into the wall again. And that's not for punishment. That's just to say, look, I hang on to old habits very tightly because I want clarity and certainty instead of a trusting relationship that has a certain mystery in it that I don't like. I really don't like. And so sometimes we can revisit the wall, and it might be a crisis again like it was before. It might be just asking questions that you can't seem to wrestle with enough, and that's okay too. And that once you start getting into this stage, if you go backwards, it's not seen as a failure. It's seen as an opportunity to grow deeper and grow deeper so that then I grow out and deep and out and deep and out and deep. That's the process that we're talking about here that I think is so important to pay attention to and understand. So that brings us to the end of stage five. We will start talking about stage six next time. Just a few reminders that are always at the end here. SGI-net.org is the place to hit a home. That's home for us on the internet. This is home for the entire SGI community. If you go there, you can subscribe and become part of the community. We'll probably have another newsletter coming out here before too long. If you want, you can use the comment box at the bottom of the page to either ask me a question or comment about something I've said or whatever, or you can DM questions to me on Instagram. I have a devoted team that is following that. I don't get on it very often. I would say I got better things to do, but I just don't. I just stay away from social media generally. And anyway, so there are a variety of resources on SGI-net.org, including digital devotionals for helping to strengthen your relationships. There's also a new podcast as part of SGI Media. It is called Unscripted, Collected Wisdom of Life, Living, and Sorrow. It's just getting going. It is charting my own journey through the grief and sorrow process of lament in my own life after the death of my friend. And I thought I would just launch into that. It is audio only. There's no video, but you get to hear what the journey through grief looks like for someone that's going through it at the time that it's happening. And which, by the way, is very similar to my book, The Seasons of Our Grief, which came out early in January. And it's available on Amazon or as a ebook on Kindle. And you can get it there, or you can go to sgi-net.org and use the store there, and you can purchase it there as well as my other grief book, Grieving the Loss of Someone You Love. And you can order either one of those there and be able to have it to you within a week or so. So you can follow us on any of the social media platforms of Instagram at SGI_international. At Facebook, Ray.Mitch, MITSCH, and LinkedIn, DR.Mitch. So you can find us on any of those. If you're looking just for the podcast, please subscribe. Please leave a review if you hear things that are encouraging to you so that we can get more people involved in the community and more people hearing the kind of material that I'm going through. But we're on any of the platform that you use to consume podcasts, whether it's Spotify or iTunes or Amazon Music or Google Music or wherever. Okay. And so, and there is merchandise, of course, on the SGI website to promote the podcast and also promote SGI. We've got a window sticker if you're interested for $5. So you can get involved in whatever way or as deeply as you want. We have retreats coming up silent retreats coming up, and they are available as well. You can find out about them on the website as well. If you're interested in helping us to continue to grow the community of SGI and scholarship fund for making it possible for people to attend the silent retreats that we're doing, you certainly can do that under the donate button on the website. If you prefer to send us a check, you can do that. Make it out to SGI, and the address is P.O. Box 322, Eastlake, Colorado 80614. And we would be ever so grateful and appreciative of your partnership in what we're trying to do in reaching the next generation and introducing people not only to Jesus, but also to a community of people that want to do life together and learn how to do that authentically and redemptively. And that's what's key here. So, that's it for tonight. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate your time. And until next time, I'll see you here at the Outpost Podcast. And as always, love you. Later. Bye.